Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
And tonight I'm joined by Kristen and Laura. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
All right, so let's get right down to it, because this episode was pretty cool. So is it a thumbs up or thumbs down for you guys? Kristen, do you want to start?
Sure. Definitely a thumbs up. There was some really, really great Snow Regina stuff that I just ate up with a spoon. I loved every second of it. And Hook was, you know, brooding and sad the entire time, which is not great, but it's still, you know, adorable. So I liked it. I thoroughly enjoyed the episode.
Awesome. Laura, what about you?
Definitely a thumbs up for me, too. I feel like Once Upon a Time has so hit its ultimate series stride in the second half of this season, and it just continues, I feel, to get better and better. So, yeah, like, mega thumbs up for me, and definitely loved this episode on many levels.
Yeah, I agree. I have to say this, like, season in general of Once Upon a Time has been really, really strong. Like, I remember last year we had moments where we're like, oh, what are they doing? Oh, I don't understand. But, like, this whole season, I feel like we haven't had too many bad things to say about it. And I really just, I love where it's going. I love that it, you know, challenges us as viewers and what we think we know every single episode. So I really, really am enjoying this season a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, for a lighthearted show, like, it obviously it's at, like, a very family-friendly hour. It's on ABC. It's Disney-connected. So you know you're not going to get into anything, like, too heavy. But I feel like they've had a really awesome balance this season of just questioning a lot of things and getting into some heavier topics without it being, like, so heavy. So, yeah, I'm just really pleased with where it's going. And I feel like, yeah, I mean, it is kind of a fluffy show, but it's not just fluff. So I totally agree. It's just, like, really smart this season on so many levels and lots of twists and turns that I can't figure out. And I'm really good with that.
I think it was really smart of them to set the first half of the season in one place, like Neverland, and then have the second half in another place, because it did, I think it breathed a lot of life back into the show. Like, it gave them a new location somewhere else to shoot for a while and to kind of separate them from Storybrooke, and now we're back in Storybrooke, and it's, you know, it's a whole new world. There's a whole bunch of new stuff going on, so I really think that was a really smart idea for season three, and I agree. They have been in stride and just, you know, racing to the finish and doing a really great job with it. So I agree.
Yes. Okay. So let's talk about some quotes, because there were some really good ones this episode. So, Kristen, did you have a quote that you particularly liked this episode?
Yes. Mine came from Snow after Cora, like, possessed her and she had, like, left her body again. And Snow says, apparently the human body has a surprising tolerance for ghost possession.
That one was really cute. Laura, did you have one?
Yeah, the one that I really loved is, like, when Regina goes into Gold Shop and she's tearing the joint apart and Belle is like, stop, like, what are you doing? And she's like, right now I need something to defeat the woman who's been puppet mastering your boyfriend. And I just thought that was hilarious because, like you could practically see the little Zelina strings on Rumple. You know, it's like, I don't want to do this. I really don't want to do this. And then his little hand goes. It's just, so I just laughed very hard when that came up.
Exactly. And mine was also a Regina one. I felt like Regina was amazing in this episode. And she's speaking to Snow and she says, you officially have a less damaging relationship with my mother than I do. And you killed her.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that pretty much sums it up for Regina, you know? Like, honestly, that's kind of how it is for her. Like, nothing ever works for Regina, but
yeah,
hopefully you that know, will change.
There was one more quote, too, and I like, too, because this episode had a really nice balance of the funny and the bittersweet and whatever. And there was that moment, the one quote that I thought this episode really kind of summed it up, it was when Regina goes, I'm really not ready for a heart-to-heart right now, and then Snow goes, I'm not sure that's even physically possible.
Yeah.
But it just, it was kind of, because I love their relationship, and I'm sure we'll get into it more, but it's just so cool that their relationship is like, you know, just the fact that Snow White and Regina are joking around together is just a whole new dynamic.
Exactly. All right, well, let's get into talking about the episode, because it opens up pretty strong with Regina being at her house and Zelina showing up with a basket of green apples, because she says that the red ones are so sickeningly sweet and everyone wants something a little sharp. And so she basically is having this conversation with Regina, and in the end we find out the reason she's doing it is to distract Regina, because she's sent the Dark One off to get Regina's heart. And she obviously figured out that Robin Hood had it. So she goes to the Robin Hood's camp and goes after the heart. And at first, Robin Hood is not willing at all to give up the heart, but then his boy gets threatened by Rumple. And the whole time, the hardest part for me is Rumple going, I really don't want to do this. I really don't want to. Please don't make me do this. Almost to the point where he was, like, begging. Like, this was not the Dark One of old. This wasn't with his little funny speech and all this other stuff. This is very much Rumple being manipulated by Zelina. At least that's how I felt about it. I don't know. How did you guys feel about it?
Yeah, totally. Because he's just like, I don't want to do this. I don't, like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you didn't get any little, you know, crazy Rumpelstiltskin giggling and all of that. It's just like, look, dude, I'm stuck. And you gotta do something, because, yeah, I absolutely, and English. The one thing I was surprised with is that he wasn't just a little more emotional about flinging the arrow and threatening the kid, especially since this is post just losing Bay. I felt like perhaps Rumple might even be a little more vulnerable and a little more emotionable about the fact that he was, oh God, did I just say emotionable? That's just sad. That he was pointing the arrow at Robin Hood's child, which, what is that kid's name, by the way?
Is it Roland?
Yes, I think you're right. Yes, I keep forgetting his name. I got to remember that. So anyway, I thought he might have been even just a little more emotional about it, but I definitely think it's legit that he didn't want to do it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that he was so willing. I mean, he knew threatening the kid would be the way to get to the heart, like to get what he needed. But it seemed, you know, very kind of it's not that part, you know, him threatening the kid was not what Gold would do, but it's definitely what the Dark One would do. And it hurt. It felt so bad for Rumple, because you know that the last thing he wants to do is threaten someone's son, because he knows what that's like and he's dealt with all of that and he just lost Bay. So yeah, I was kind of the same way. I was like, I feel bad that he has to do this, but you know, like, it's, he knows what he has to do to get it. So.
Right. I also felt like to a certain degree that because he is Rumpelstiltskin, he is able to resist and hold off a little more than if it was, like, say, somebody else under her control. Like, I felt like if it was somebody else, like, he'd just be zapping those arrows at the Merry Men, you know, or just would have been like, boom, kid's dead, okay, give me now what you want. And I just felt like because he's Rumpelstiltskin, he's actually able to be in the position of, I don't want to do this, and it's taking, I felt like, all his effort to, like, stop it from happening immediately. So I felt like that one, like, has a degree of going into it also.
Yeah. I was also really surprised at how horrible Robin Hood felt about having to give up her heart. He knew he had to do it, but at the same time, it was something very hard for him to do. But he
yeah.
was very, like, when Regina came to see if everyone was okay, like, he was so remorseful over what happened, over not having really known Regina very long. Because he doesn't remember their time together in the Enchanted Forest. He's only known her for the time that they've been in Storybrooke. So
right.
it's such a connection for them to, like, have, you know what I mean? And him being so willing to risk everything to protect her heart. So I thought that was kind of a cool, maybe,
well, I feel
metaphor
like,
going on there.
Right. Well, I feel like the thing that is, I mean, clearly the most important thing to Robin Hood is his son, who Regina saved, you know, back a couple episodes ago. And then secondly, when, I think that the next thing that's most important to him is his word and his honor. And he gave his word that he would do this, and obviously he failed. So that was, you know, a very significant thing, because for the man who has nothing, all he has is his word and his honor. So she comes in and is like, "What?" He's like, "My lady, I failed you," and says, "What happens?" And as soon as, like, he says, you know, he was threatening my boy, and she's like, "No, there's nothing worth, you know, nothing is worth risking the life of a child." The fact that she is so, like, immediately on board with that concept and kind of, like, reiterates that for him, I feel like that's what the connection is, that, you know, their both best parts are about loving their children, and I feel like they're kind of bonded over that aspect.
Exactly. I really enjoyed that moment between them. Even though it was sad, I felt like they both had a lot to offer, and it was played really well between them as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was acted really well.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, we kind of go to this flashback of Cora, and we see her in a, what's it called? A bar.
It's a tavern.
A tavern, thank you. Tavern. I'm like, a bar is not the right word.
Yeah, she's, all those bars back then.
Right.
In
the woods, she's at a tavern, like, being a tavern wench. And the guys are always hitting on her, but she, you know, she means to make something of herself. But there's one man who's been giving her a lot of attention and all this other stuff. And Jonathan is his name. And as she's speaking with him, he drops a
handkerchief?
Thank you.
Yeah, oh, a monogrammed handkerchief or something, right?
Like his token is what I always think of.
Yeah. So he dropped this monogrammed handkerchief onto the table, and she was like, "Oh, that's the royal symbol." And he's like, "Oh, well, haha, don't tell anyone. I'm a prince. I'm Prince Jonathan." I'm like, "Prince Jonathan. Right.
It's kind of like the equivalent of what's your sign, like, back then. Like, I was like, world's worst pickup line, or world's worst, like, pickup tactic, you know?
Yeah. So she buys it. He offers to marry her in front of everyone and gives her a straw ring on her finger and then says, "I'll replace it with gold." And the way he said it, it was almost like, "Oh, wait, is he going to spin it? Like, what's going on?" Like, you had that moment of, wait a minute. And then he kind of goes, "But I have to go off and I'll be back." So she decides, well, because they're engaged, she'll sleep with him. So here's your lesson, ladies. Don't always believe what they say. because he wasn't very truthful. He didn't come back for her. So we come out of that flashback, and now Regina has to, like, deal with the fact that Zelina has her heart, and Regina's like, "Well, if she wanted me dead, that, you know, I'm not dead, so that's not the purpose of her taking my heart." Regina also mentioned that she protected her heart against Zelina, I think. So there's that. So Regina decides, as she's tearing her, you know, apart Gold's shop, that she can have a seance. Because all you need for a seance in order to communicate with the dead is the murder weapon and the person that murdered them present. And conveniently, they have the candle, and they have Snow White.
I know. The whole time she's doing this, I'm going, this ain't going to end well. This is so not going to end well. Like, why does summoning Cora seem like remotely a good idea to anyone?
I also love how, like, talking to the dead apparently is very easy as long as you have what you need, and they're, like, freaking out about it, and it's just adorable. Like, well, it's actually not that hard. You just have to have the murderer and the murder weapon. Like, that's awkward.
Yeah, right?
It's still like, oh, yeah, hey, look at that. So they all the big players, so we have Emma, Charming, Regina, Snow, and Hook, sit at the table to do the seance, and while the portal opens, Regina's demanding Cora to come speak to her, and she won't come and speak to her. And somehow it looks like Hook bumps the table, and so it's broken.
See, now, I'm curious. Now, I tried to rewind it. I wasn't so sure.
He bumped the table? Me either.
Yeah. I thought it was absolutely that Snow screamed, and he did it to be, like, gallant for some reason.
Right.
Like,
I didn't feel like it was his fault either.
No, but he was willing to take the blame, and mm-hmm. I was just like, go Hook. Like,
well,
yeah.
At that point in the episode, we hadn't, like, I mean, Cora had not appeared. I thought Cora was, like, in Hook for about 30 seconds. Because
oh,
I thought that she had maybe she had made everything stop because she had actually arrived, and yes, they didn't know that, and that she was in Hook and tried to, you know, get everybody to think it had failed. So I originally was, like, freaking out because I was like, oh, my God, is she, like, in Hook or is she in someone else? Like, I'm looking at all of them trying to figure it out, and then it never went anywhere. So I was like, oh, okay, she's not. Okay, good. That's all right. I can handle that.
That would have been so creepy.
Here's a question. It's like, she's summoning, you know, Quora, and then eventually, obviously, we get Quora. Was anybody kind of surprised that the version she got was young Quora and not, like, mature Quora? I mean, obviously, the events that she wants to question her about concerned the younger Quora, but, like, I don't think she knows that when she's being summoned. Like, I was kind of surprised that we didn't get the older, like, the version of Quora that died was a woman, like, in her 60s. I was just surprised that, like, that didn't happen.
Yeah, my only guess was that Quora, now that she's dead, her spirit takes whatever, like, physical, you know, visual form that she wants. So if Cora's choosing, Cora's going to choose being young and beautiful.
That's a good point.
That's just kind of how I justified it in my head. Like, if she's dead and has any say in how she looks, she's going to choose to be her younger version.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, I think most people, like, if that was, like, if they were given a choice of, like, what age would they come back, and they would totally pick their 20s and 30s. So I guess that makes sense, yeah.
Absolutely. So from there, they kind of go, okay, well, it didn't work, so we'll just kind of ignore this and be gone. So Emma and Hook go off, and Charming goes off. So and Snow says she's going to stay with Regina. And they kind of, you know, they're having a lot of girl bonding, especially in this episode. I mean, throughout most of this second half of the season, but I feel like especially this episode we had a lot of it. And so Snow's like, no, I'm gonna stay with her. And so as soon as Snow and Regina are alone in the house, the front door disappears. Not a good sign, kids. And we get a couple more flashbacks of Quora, and then Quora possesses Snow, and we kind of get the rest of the story. And basically the story goes, Prince Jonathan wasn't really a prince, he was the gardener, and he kind of set Quora up, and Quora said, well, you know, I'm pregnant, what are we going to do? And he kind of blows her off, he's really just a big jerk. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of arrogant. I feel like we should know who he is as a character. Like, he's an evil character. I just can't decide what he or who he would be. Like, I get this vibe from him. Like, it should be apparent.
I got a little bit, like, stylistically from him. Like, kind of like a Gaston in Beauty and the Beast vibe. Just a little bit on his clothing. But he didn't really have big enough hair. And he wasn't quite as big of, like, a boast and a bravado kind of guy, but sort of how he was dressed. Like, I definitely got a little bit of a Gaston vibe off of him. I don't know if anybody else felt like that.
I was running through Jonathans in my head, like, trying to come up with a fairy tale character with the name Jonathan, and the only person I could think of was John Smith from Pocahontas. And I was like, and he is not the build for that, so that is definitely not his connection. So,
yeah, no.
But that was, yeah, I do agree. He does kind of have the Gaston look a little bit. Yeah, but not quite as burly as.
Yeah, and not, like, the rest of, like, I felt like maybe that was just kind of coincidental. It was sort of your routine medieval-y garb that we just kind of chucked at him, exactly. So, yeah.
I have to say I was very excited to see this actor because he actually showed up in an episode of Heart of Dixie a while back, and I really liked him, and he was there for, like, one episode. So when he showed up, I got very excited. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't know he was coming on the show. Like, that's awesome. So I'm hoping he pops up again at some point.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to have a really big role eventually at some point, one way or another. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because they always tie everything together in, like, weird little knots and everything. So definitely, I think that's a possibility.
Yeah.
So from there, Quora basically calls for help, and I don't know what her plan was, but she was calling for help, and who happens by the gazebo in the middle of the garden?
But the real prince.
But the real Prince Leopold, which is a whole other level of cuckoo ca-choo. So we have this, and he's like, I'm willing to help you. And of course, Cora puts on her best batty eyelashes and is like, oh, poor damsel in distress. And he talks about how he's going to meet Ava, his future queen, and how he's set to marry her and all of these things. And that doesn't deter Cora a bit. And so in the end, Leopold decides that he will marry Cora and forsake his kind of arranged marriage with Ava. And somehow, oh, Cora is in the gazebo once again, and Jonathan the gardener finds her and says, well, my child will not be passed off as royalty unless I get paid, being the darling that he is. So Cora, in her infinite wisdom, decides that she will steal something and give it to him so that he goes away and she can live her happily ever after. Sadly for Cora, Ava has overheard all of this and she tells Leopold. So this is how the riff between Cora and Ava started. So in The Miller's Daughter, we see Ava being nasty and she trips Cora. But in reality, I think this happened before that. So now we know why Ava was the way she was towards Cora. And Cora basically gets kicked out, has to own the fact that she's pregnant, and is sent away, and then Leopold, of course, marries Ava. So yeah, there's that whole thing. Now, I would like to point out, as many, many people have in the comment section that I've looked at, it's a little bit gross that Cora married off her daughter to the man that she was supposed to marry.
Like, not for nothing, but did he not remember this past history? And did it not seem, like, remotely a bad idea?
I'm thinking Cora brainwashed him somehow.
Yeah, because I'm like, did it not seem like a pretty bad idea to marry the daughter of the person you jilted because she was pregnant with the illegitimate child of your gardener? And, like, yeah, it just, like not for nothing, but it kind of is starting to seem like a plot from General Hospital.
But not only that, but did you not think that maybe the girl that was thrown in front of you was the illegitimate child? Like,
yeah, like, right, because I don't think there's a huge age gap there, so yeah, right? Would it not seem just like a colossally bad idea on so many levels? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was so, a little squicky. I'm like, what on earth? As soon as I was like, oh, yeah, that's really weird. That's really weird. So anyway.
Well, here's a question, too, because I was kind of wondering, like, when he was saying to her, just tell me the truth, do you feel like if she had come clean and said, okay, you got me, so here's the story and this and this and this, and because I felt like he was saying, like, you can tell me anything, just don't lie to me. Do you think if she came clean, it would have been fine?
It may have been better than it was. He may have done something to try and help her if she just explained.
Right. Yeah, I was just wondering if anybody else got that vibe.
I mean, in the end, yeah. He is very kind. But because she stole from him.
Right, and then lied.
That's different. Yeah. You know, she stole and she lied. Had she been honest, he may have at least tried to help her if he couldn't marry her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He may have tried to help her and the child.
Right.
I always hate these kinds of, like, it's almost an ultimatum, but it's not. I hate these kinds of things in stories, though, because, of course, she's going to lie. It's a child, and that means that she can't, you know, she really can't marry you if she's actually pregnant. So, of course, she's going to lie, because if there's any way for her to get out of this, she's going to try. So right. It always feels so, like, disingenuous for them to say, you can come, you know, if I can trust you, if you tell me the truth, then everything will be fine, because if they tell you a lie and the lie works, then everything will be fine.
Right.
So, you know, like, I always feel bad for the person who has to lie to try and save themselves. Like, I always feel bad for them. So, yeah, I actually felt bad for Cora a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I did feel bad because initially it wasn't really her, you know what I mean? She made a poor choice.
Right.
Should it have ruined her the way it did? No. But unfortunately, she continued to make poor choices.
Yeah, and despite, like, I hear what you're saying, Kristen, like, I totally agree with you, and I guess Like, as a parent, I sort of get the concept of you would do anything to save your child, like you just would. But I still feel like so much of Cora operates on her saving Cora first rather than her children first. Like,
Oh,
that part,
definitely.
that's just like so screwed up. Because I feel like most people who are parents, it's like, they would do anything for their kids, and I just don't feel like Cora's just not wired that way for whatever reason. Like,
No, yeah, she's.
she'd do whatever for her kids as it would help to help her, which is just sick. So.
Right, as it, you look at Regina or you look at Rumple, and they would have literally given them their lives and everything for their children. And
Right.
Regina's not even her blood child, and she would have done it for Henry. But then you look at Cora, and no, she's not going to give up everything
Right.
for her
Right,
kid.
like
Like, that's,
as
yeah.
screwed up and like as really manipulative and evil as past lives of Rumple and Regina had been, like if they really like they would have like genuinely done things for their children, although made really poor choices too. Like, I just feel like Cora was never on the same wavelength. Okay.
Right, agreed.
Yep. All right, so after that whole kind of scene plays out and the demon is exorcised from Snow, we kind of flash over to Granny's, where Emma is hanging out with Hook, and she's demonstrating her powers for him, and
So funny.
she zaps his hook off his hand and puts it up into the chandelier. And he was so thoroughly unimpressed with that. He's like, "Seriously, Swan.
Like, do
Love
not.
it."
What did he say?
Like, he's
Like, it's
just.
such bad form to take a man's hook.
Yeah.
It's like he's
He's
just
just such a.
emasculated him. I'm taking your hook.
He's
Boom.
such a grumpy Hook in this episode. Like, it's so adorable because he's just like, "I can't, I know what I have to do and I don't want to do it and this all sucks and I'm just going to sit here and pout." Like, he's just so
Pretty
cute.
much,
He
yeah.
cracked me up.
I just loved Emma being like, "Wee, magic!" Like, it was like, oh my God, it's, you know what it reminds me of almost? Like, it would be almost like if Henry got magic, because can't you just see Henry going, "Look, I can make the salt shakers fly. Look, I'm making the paper towel roll spin." Like, I felt like she was almost like a 13-year-old boy going, "Hey, Ma, look what I can do!" Boom! There, the hook just flew across the room. Like, it was the same thing, I felt.
Yeah, it was kind of
So true.
funny. I loved it. So we had that moment, and then at during that time, Belle runs in and she says, "I know what they're doing. I know what Zelina's up to." And basically, the only spell that includes the brain, a heart, some courage, and a baby, because those are really required for spells, is time travel. So they now know that Zelina plans to travel back in time. They don't know exactly what for, but they do know that that is her plan. From
Can I
there,
just say, like,
sure.
most random ingredients ever?
Yeah, I'm like, because a heart, a brain, and courage, all good and well for the Land of Oz. The baby thing totally throwing me off.
And for time travel, those things are all
Right.
necessary. Like, what?
Right. Well, I could see how you would have to be brave and smart and have a heart, like have heart to time travel. I could see how you could play with that a little bit, but is the baby because you have to be youthful? You have to have a vessel to go back in to travel back in time? So she needs the baby so she can become the baby? I don't know.
Big question mark. Just over the whole thing, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. So they decide to go tell Regina and Snow and everyone. But before they do that, we cut to Zelina and Rumple, and Zelina's demanded his presence at dinner, and he's kind of like, "I don't want to go. Kid, trust me, you're coming to dinner." It's very uncomfortable, and Rumple is not happy. So from there, she begins to reveal her great big plan to him, and she says, "Your son is waiting for you. He's waiting back in time. You just have to go and find him. And when I do this, you'll just have to go and find him. You can do this. You can be a part of my plan, and you can find your son, and you can still have your son." And Rumple begins to play like he's very interested in this thing. And then there's a really squicky, icky, did we have to go there moment where they start to like make out, which is kind of gross. And really, it's Rumple's big play to remove the dagger from her inner thigh.
Like, not
Anyway.
for nothing, but like, Zelina got more action than Belle's gotten. I was like, really? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, poor Belle. Poor Belle. Zelina got a hotter kiss off of Rumpel than Belle's gotten.
Yeah, so he does try to go for the dagger, and of course she catches on, unfortunately. Oh, to have Rumpel with his own dagger back. So from there, she's like, well, fine, you're now cut out of my grand plan, and she kind of takes it out on him a little bit, and she gets very angry, as we've learned she becomes whenever she doesn't get her way. She's like a small child in an adult body, really. She's a big temper tantrum kind of girl. It's really unbecoming. So we'll see what happens to that. So now Rumpel is unfortunately back in his cage and still being controlled by Zelina.
But, like, eerily, she's, like, not that you wouldn't be turned on by Robert Carlyle, because, like, you know, hey, but, like, I'm like, and she is turned on by Rumpel, who she's possessing, and, yeah, my brain, like, went scrambled eggs right there in the middle of that scene.
I have so many comments that I'm not going to make right now. Anyway, we're going to move on before I say something inappropriate. So, from there, we go to everyone showing back up with Snow and Regina, and them telling Regina what it is that Zelina wants, that she wants to go back in time. And now they all realize that this could be a huge issue as far as they all go, because what will Zelina change? Will she erase the fact that Regina even exists? You know, what is her end game? Because the travel back in time thing is super creepy, A, and B, who is she going to destroy? Is she going to destroy all of them? How would her going back change everyone's future? So, the only thing, and this is kind of another funny statement, is that, like, Snow's like, well, at least we have a little bit more time, as she's, like, patting her belly, like, stay in there, baby. She's like, we have a little more incubator time, and I'm like, that's just weird. So we have that moment as well. And then Snow and Regina kind of have this heart-to-heart, and Regina basically, Snow basically lays it out for Regina that, you know, she's not bad. She's not like her mother, that she, you know, she's made really good choices, and the choices she's made have always been for love, in a way. And so Snow basically tells her, you need to go and find out what you want to live for and do it. Find out what means something to you and take it. Don't just sit here and you know, do what you're doing now. Go live for you, which is the best speech ever, because then it leaves Regina to go follow what she really wants. And so she goes and finds Mr. Robin Hood and gives him a kiss. And Robin Hood's like, hold, please, what just happened? Okay, wait, I'm going to kiss you back now. So that finally happened. I feel like we've been waiting forever for that to happen. So the episode definitely ended on a high note. What did you guys think about that whole Robin Hood-Regina business?
I'm just still, like, myself personally so stunned that I am okay with the idea of Robin Hood being with somebody other than Marion. Like, I'm just still, like, routinely amazed that I'm good with this, and I've never been the most huge Regina fan ever, and I'm good with it being Regina, so I'm just kind of, like, sort of overall surprised in general. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I was more than happy about it. I moved from being a Regina hater, because I have to say I was not a fan of hers in, you know, first season, like, even as a villain, and I, you know, can appreciate a good villain. Even as a villain, I just hated her. She was so annoying, and now I'm cheering for her. Like, I am so excited for her, and the whole Robin Hood thing is great. So, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I'm so excited for Regina to kind of have her moment and to be willing to own up to things. Like, Tinks must be doing, like, a happy dance somewhere, being like, finally. Because, you know, this is what she threw away so long ago. And now she's willing to take it for herself, which I think is so good. And I love Lana Perla in the way she's portraying Regina right now. I love it. I mean, I thought she was great when she was wicked, you know, evil. She's not wicked, the other one's wicked. So just to have her kind of, I don't know, I just love it. I love what she's doing right now with the character. There's just so much going on.
I was going to say, I really, really, really loved the Snow-Regina interaction in this episode. Then, like, especially that last scene where they're together and they're talking, and Snow is always so positive and sickly sweet about things, but she used her, you know, her Snow positivity in exactly the right way here, and it just, there was just something about that scene, it just shows how far these two have come from mortal enemies to now her being the one to say, Regina, like, you have to take what you, you know, what you can get, you have, you know what you want, you have to go take it, and it just, it was so beautiful, I just love that whole thing.
Yeah, I just, this episode was just so good all around, like, there were so many good things that happened in it. I really, really enjoyed it. So we're going to go quick to some listener feedback, which was some pretty cool. I love this first theory, and it revolves around Mr. Prince Jonathan. So this one's from Stacy, and it says, wild theory. Anyone else think he might turn out to be the Scarecrow later on? I felt like there were tons of subtle clues suggesting this. First off, he's a gardener. Scarecrows are in gardens and fields. There was that look. There was what looked like a pitchfork beside him when he revealed himself as the bad guy to Cora. And Cora even said something about her either taking out his brain or making, or him lacking a brain, which the Scarecrow always wanted a brain from the wizard. And, oh, and then he also gave her the straw ring initially. So what do you guys think about that? Is it a possibility that there could be a Scarecrow?
I was, when I read this, I was trying to remember if we knew whether we were going to see the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion. Like, have we heard anything about that?
We have not, but it doesn't mean we won't.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's not ruling it out.
Right.
But yeah,
we get,
like,
Glinda next week, so.
Yes. Yeah, so it, you know, there were a lot of clues. I, you know, reading this, it makes a ton of sense that he could end up being the Scarecrow, but, you know, as we said before, he kind of had some Gastonish qualities, but I definitely think he's going to be back in some way or another.
Right.
That's for sure.
And I love the fact that, and it, again, that straw ring was really odd. Like, it just felt like, hi, here's a big neon sign to something that you're all going to miss. Especially because of the way he made the comment he would turn it into gold or bring, you know, he would bring her back a gold one. But originally he says something about turning it to gold. And that's what kind of, like, made me sit up and, like, pay more attention. So, I don't know. There could definitely be something there. We shall see. And the next one is from Ravenclaw 1991. And she's, and I swear these people's families are more intertwined than we thought. Cora almost married Snow's dad. Hey, wait, didn't Regina marry Snow's dad? Ooh, that means she married the man her mother almost married. Yes, we all agree it's really gross. And kind of, like, contrived all by Cora, obviously, as we know. So even more disturbing is that Cora set it all up, which is just weird. So thank you guys for listening. As always, you can leave your comments, theories, all that good stuff on the